This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, from the Lineup Media Group Studios, and we are live also on Facebook. Welcome to all our Facebook listeners. You'll be able to, at the bottom of your screen, go ahead and write any questions you might have for our special guest today from abroad, and we'll try to get your questions answered during the show. This morning, from the U.S., we are heading around the world with some of the top coaches and experts in the game. Today, it will bring us to Great Britain. Before we start, don't forget, please do us a favor, go on our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Subscribe if you're not a subscriber. Subscribe to iTunes or Stitcher. It's real easy. You'll get notices every time a new show comes up, and you'll be able to go back and see all the other shows. So that's what's great about the podcast. If you really love the show, do us a favor. Give us a great rating. That helps us. The rating helps a lot getting the show out, and we're always trying to get the show out. Also, don't forget, we've got our five-set DVD series on sale. It's over 100 games, drills, and skills that will help you run a fun and organized practice. We are all over social media. We believe in it. We think it gets the word out. And also gives a lot of great information, baseball tips. We have videos. Follow us there at Baseball Out. Again, that Twitter at Baseball Out. And we love getting your emails. Those are very important to us. Ask any questions you like about the game, any questions about our host, whatever you like. Send the emails to info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Okay, we are going to discuss today baseball development in another country. We're heading to Great Britain. And we're going to talk about, what it takes to be a national team coach, the importance behind it, what coaching development programs in that country, how they develop the grassroots level of the game. We're going to discuss other areas. So first of all, let me tell you a little bit about our guest. Our guest, his name is Liam Carroll, currently Great Britain's national team manager, who I witnessed recently myself as a technical director with the World Softball Baseball Confederation and Major League Baseball's technical committee at the World Baseball Classic. He did an outstanding job as the manager. Really enjoyed watching his club, compete. It was in Brooklyn, and they did a fantastic job. He's made a major impact in Great Britain baseball and also spreading the game around the world. Now, tell you a little bit about him. He was born in London, former Baseball Softball UK's full-time regional coach, club development officer for London. He also has a long history with the Great Britain baseball program, first as a player with the GB Cadets and Juniors, and then as a senior player in the European Championships in 2003. Now, Carroll's North American career began as a player at Potterville College in California. He went to serve as the director of baseball operations at the NCAA Division I University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He began, between 2005 and 2010. He worked with 16 players who subsequently signed professional contracts with major league players. In the British domestic leagues, he was an assistant coach for the London Mets in 2007 and 2008, when they won the back-to-back national baseball championships. Now, his goal is to continue baseball at a top sport in Great Britain, and also a major goal is to make it to the 2012 Olympics. Now, first of all, let's welcome Liam Carroll, the Baseball Outside the Box. It's a pleasure having him. Liam, how you doing, man?
I'm really well, Pete. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure having you. And again, as I mentioned on the show, I had a great opportunity to meet you in Brooklyn and also to watch how you operate as a manager and how your club operates. And it was so much fun watching that club play. You guys did an outstanding job.
thank you so much. That was a tremendous experience. Almost there with I know your good friend Jerry Weinstein did a phenomenal job with Team Israel, and congratulations to them. But it was a tremendous experience for our program nonetheless, and certainly a highlight of my career so far.
Yeah, and I say a young career because you are young, but you've been in the game a long time, and obviously you've done a lot. So what we'd like to do right away, let's just get started. Let's hit the road on this. Let's talk about the Great Britain baseball. Tell us a little bit about it. Tell our audience around the world, you know, how many players are playing there. Just whatever you think is important that people need to know about Great Britain baseball, and then we'll get into the detailed questions.
Absolutely. Certainly a minority sport in the UK. Currently there's around 3,500 players across all age groups in the UK, but certainly a very storied and long tradition of baseball that does exist. The highlight, if you go back long enough, would be 1938, when Great Britain won what is recognized as the first Baseball World Cup. So we do have as many World Cup championships in baseball as we do in soccer. And what you kind of see in the history of British baseball is communities dotted around the country that have tremendous histories but might not have the sustainability. So currently baseball is most popular in and around London, but you can look into Scotland. There's baseball in Scotland, there's baseball in Northern Ireland, there's baseball a little bit in Wales, and then certainly we're growing. We've seen about 18% growth in the last decade, and if you combine baseball and fast pitch and even slow pitch softball, there's about 22,000 players across the country.
Now, you, when you mention all the players, one of the biggest things. Now, I should have mentioned earlier that I did mention that you were born in UK, but also what was interesting about I'm going to go back to the classic for a second, only because I remember this. Your dad is, I believe, from Brooklyn, and huge Brooklyn fan. And all of a sudden, now you come in with a Great Britain team and playing in Brooklyn. That had to be exciting.
It was so cool, and I certainly have to credit Dad for my catching the baseball bug. He was actually born in Chicago, so we have that connection with you there right away from Cook County. But his parents left for New York when my dad was just a baby, and he grew up in Manhattan, but was an absolutely massive Brooklyn Dodgers fan. And it's a shame that he wasn't able to make it out for the Classic, but it certainly did feel like we'd gone full circle when however many decades after he'd left New York, I was able to coach in his then backyard. It was very cool.
That is great. Now, big thing was, you know, you were hired, to head up the national team program. Now, something that I'm familiar with, I go back a long time ago with the Belgium national team and trying to get them to the Olympics. And I know during my time, I made a lot of mistakes and decided something like that. And I read where, obviously you took it as a challenge. And one of the things that I read was that once you were hired, or right before you were hired, people were talking about a culture shift. Explain a little bit about when you were first hired by Great Britain Baseball, what your goal was, as far as the sport and the culture shift that they were talking about, that you needed to do in order to lay out a successful national team program, but also growing the game nationally.
Well, I the first thing I say is I'm sure I'm making, if not as many more mistakes than you did, and boy, is it a learning experience having oversight of an entire national team's program. In terms of the culture, I followed some very good and successful coaches, but was actually the first domestic-based head coach of our men's national team for over a decade. So in spite of all of the great work that the previous head coaches had done, what I saw that existed was several different teams. So we had an under-15 national team, an under-18 national team. At the time, I was coaching our under-21s, which became under-23s. The senior national team headed up by someone living in another country, and it didn't feel like a true program. There wasn't connectivity between each program, and I don't think as much as our head coaches were well-intentioned, it was easy for them to thread the needle between the youngest player and the oldest player. And so in terms of culture, it was really trying to turn Great Britain Baseball from a collection of teams into a program. So it was beginning with our mission and vision, all the way through to your systems and the bunt defenses and cuts and relay systems that every team in the world's going to have, but making sure that our 14-year-olds were learning the same thing as our professional players. Where I think perhaps it's a little bit different culturally than other national teams programs is most national teams, their job is to perform. That's it. They're there to win medals, win championships, and certainly that's part of our mission and vision. But what we try to do is expand that to have the biggest impact we can have on British baseball as a whole. So our mission is to inspire, develop, and perform. The World Baseball Classic was a great opportunity for ticking all of those boxes to inspire, which we measure as to inspire participation in and support of Great Britain baseball, to develop the best British baseball talent into world-class athletes and teams, and the part that every program has to perform on the international stage and create a winning tradition. So it's certainly a battle each day with the culture. We've had high points and low points, but we're really trying to play as big a role as we can in British baseball as a whole, knowing that the better British baseball is on the ground, the better we're going to be internationally. And if you look at the WBC, which we had a very good team, I would argue the strongest British national team that was ever assembled. But sort of we're existing in this world where our national team is comprised primarily of overseas-based British passport holders. So there's a big gap between our WBC team and what we see on a daily basis in the UK. And our hope culturally is that we can close that gap.
Yeah, now, obviously coming in, you were born in Great Britain, but, now coming in and having to head up the whole program, you've got several coaches under your helm, could have, I don't know how many you had. What were some of the key elements that were important to you that were standardized within the whole program, whether it's your younger clubs all the way up to your national team, your senior team?
There's so many. And you know what? One of the things that is a struggle with national teams is how seldom we get to see our players. I don't think there's many things that suck about having such a privileged position, but I will say it sucks that we don't see our players very often. So establishing a program, I mean, I think of the college environment, and there's some coaches at all levels of college baseball and high school and little league that do a phenomenal job building programs, and I would argue that's easier if you have a facility, which we know is an important part of building a college program, how much money goes into facilities. So without that kind of marquee thing to hang our hat on, we created the GB Way. Basically, it's a player resource, a player and coach resource. And people will be familiar. They'll hear the term the Dodgers way or the Yankees way, or at the moment we're hearing that's Cub as the kind of hashtag theme for the Chicago Cubs. So we don't have a Wrigley Field or a facility in Arizona, but we have the GB Way as a document. And within that, it's certainly not completely every single last thing, but as many different things that are important to our program so that our players have something tangible that they can put their hands on, or in this case, open their computer or their phone. And in this document, you'll see everything from welcome letters to our mission, our vision, our core values, which are attitude, integrity, confidence, and hustle. And that's inspired by 1938. I referenced 1938 as the year that we won the World Cup. It's where we've been and where we want to go to. So we took the first, ninth, third, and eighth letters of the alphabet for attitude, integrity, confidence, and hustle as our core values. In the past, I think, and this is one of the biggest things that I'm proud of in this document, is in the past we've had a hitting philosophy and an offensive philosophy and a base running philosophy and a pitching philosophy and a fielding philosophy and so many different things to learn and all good stuff. But it, given that we don't see our players very often, maybe it was an overdue. So we really refined that into a playing philosophy, which is to win by winning the free base war. And quality at bats is hugely massively the focus of our offensive approach. And then we have core principles across each area. But we've really tried to simplify things within the GB Way. And it's the playing philosophy that I think is the type of document and resource that is most important that we share with our players.
Sure. And now you have I'm assuming a club system in Great Britain, like a lot of countries in Europe. How is the communication between the clubs and the national team program? How important is that? And so everybody's pretty much on the same page when it comes to the development of the individual players, even though they're not national players, but some of them will be national players.
For sure. That's, I think, the biggest thing that we need to improve on here. There's very good relationships with some clubs, not so good relationships with other clubs. Typically, that's born out of where most of the players come from. There might be a club that doesn't have or has only a few or one national team player. And I think that's where oftentimes the relationship is neglected. So given our mission of trying to inspire and develop British baseball as a whole, it's an area that we have to do a better job of. We're in a situation where the best players and coaches are existing at the national teams level, and also I think the best coaching is existing at the national teams level. I would love it if we were in a world where, much like USA Baseball would be, is I'm going to pick the select the best 15, 20 players for a tournament in any given year, and we go away, implement a very basic playbook, and go and play. But our clubs, some of them do a great job. Some of them have coaches that are just learning themselves. So we're at the national team levels with our younger players having to teach some big-time fundamentals. To change that, it's really important that we do a better job of building relationships with clubs. The challenge for us is budget and time. We have tremendous people that help out with our national teams program, but all of them, myself included, at the national team levels are volunteers. So it's finding the resources to make sure we can go out and visit every club, which is part of the goal.
Yeah, and during that time, how is your communication with your national team players throughout the year when you don't see them? How do you know, do you have a system or at least an idea of what they're working on, if they're working on certain things that, you'd like for them to follow and that they're actually doing it?
For sure. So we exist in various different ways with regards to that. With our youngest players that we see the most because they're all domestic, and with our adult players that are domestic-based, we'll use just your standard email and text and whatnot. We have used Facebook for the adults and trialed it with younger players, but obviously you got to have their parents involved in Facebook type settings if you're going to have the kids involved. It's worked really well with the adults where we can post programs, interact on, you name it, different kind of topics, whether it's having a conversation about a baseball IQ test or just posting videos from MLB. And the interaction has helped replace not seeing our players more than once or twice a month, especially in the off season. Then what we're in a situation is we can provide a development program for any area. And one of the areas that I'm particularly advanced, I think, is within sports science. Our sports science director, Alan Dean, is world class, and I put him up there with the best strength and conditioning guys in the world. And he's one of those guys that's got about 26 letters after his name. He's got every qualification there is, but he's never going to tell you because he's so humble. So we can provide the S&C program or the nutritional program or the throwing program or the hitting drills, whatever it might be. And then it's sort of an open offer. A professional player is not going to need any of that or shouldn't need any of that. We might have a college player that doesn't need any of that. Then we've got a guy that's retired from professional baseball that does need that kind of input. And then we've got a youth player that needs everything. So it's almost like a pick and mix. We can provide everything, and then it's up to the player to be honest with what they need.
And that's great. That's obviously going to help with one of your major goals, which is trying to make it to the Olympics, I believe in 2020.
That's it. It's sort of the pinnacle of the mission and vision as we wrote it out a couple of years ago when we started, was on the performance side to qualify for the Tokyo 2020 Games. We've kind of been sitting in the dark, not knowing what the qualification route is going to be. some rumors are starting to emerge, but bottom line and most excitingly, it looks like there will be a realistic route for us to have a chance. It'll be a big challenge. As you well know, the competition of the European elite is very, very tough with the Dutch and the Italians and countries like Germany and the Czechs just behind them. But we have a chance, and with the type of personnel that we can supplement with from overseas, your British passport holders in the US and Canada, we'll have a chance, and that's all we can ask for.
And it gives your players, I would assume, an ability, you know, young players to see, wow, we have a chance to go to the Olympics, you know, something to build to. When you're trying to get young players to play the game in Great Britain, you know, like any other country, young kids are always looking to aspire at a higher level. So you have your national team programs at each level, and then you also have the ability possibly to go to the Olympics. I mean, those are all, you know, goals that young kids could strive for and helps develop the sport.
100%. And the disappointment of baseball being dropped from the London Olympics in 2012 was something that still stings in certain communities here, and certainly it's something we look back on, what could have been to create that aspiration. And the big focus of the London Olympics was creating a legacy, and I don't think that there's any other sport that can create excitement for so many different types of kids, the fast kid, the slow kid, but the slow kid that's got a big stick, and we've all been around the slow kid that rakes. So there's some resentment, bitterness, disappointment that we didn't have that opportunity on our doorstep, but the Olympics are the Olympics, and if we can get there, and it's like you say, it's kids seeing the national team players with a Great Britain uniform on TV, then we're going to create some noise and get more people playing the sport, and the more that our current kids can have something to look up to, that's just absolutely huge. And we got that in small doses with the World Baseball Classic. There were people that stayed up to watch the web stream, but to do that on the Olympics will be a completely different scale.
You know, and for all our Facebook listeners and watchers out there, we are with Liam Carroll, the national team coach with Great Britain. He was also the World Baseball Classic manager, did an outstanding job. Got a chance to witness it firsthand. It was really a lot of fun. Liam, I want to take it to talk a little bit about expectations, especially because of our coaches and players and fans all over the world are going to be listening. You know, expectations for you when you took over the Great Britain national team and also their national program was very high, because you were standing on, I guess, from what I read, on the shoulders of giants that developed the program before you there in Great Britain. Tell us a little bit about those expectations, how you dealt with them, how coaches can deal with them, because I think all coaches have that expectations once they join a new program. How do you actually deal with that?
It's a great question, and we actually have in the GB Way resource, a section called Expectations, which specifically for the document is my expectations of our players. And they're high and they remain the same regardless of whether it's a 12-year-old or a big leaguer. How they understand them might certainly be different. My expectations of how a 14-year-old goes about their business certainly would be different from a big leaguer, but the expectations are to be prepared, to be accountable, and to play hard. And the reason I was reminded of this is there's a quote at the top of the section from Joe Maddon, and he says that we should all have high expectations. You should have high expectations. I should. We all should. I'm really amazed when you read about people talking about expectations. People want to run away from that. I think you should run towards that all the time. That's the best place to be. That's where the action is. That's where you're alive. And I think a little bit of Joe Maddon is certainly a good thing from time to time. In terms of expectations for me, the beautiful thing is I sort of set them myself. I was hired to be the head coach of the men's national team, which sort of brings with it oversight of our age group teams. There wasn't a clear directive. You need to go and win this tournament. You need to go and win that tournament. Or you don't need to. You need to finish in the top 10. There was nothing like that. So the beautiful thing was that we set the expectations for ourselves. The challenging thing is I think you're generally harder on yourself when they are your expectations and not someone else's. And we were certainly very, very aggressive with our vision for Great Britain baseball. We've already talked about the Olympics, which will be a big stretch. Part of our vision was to maintain a top 12 world ranking. So we're looking at qualification for the Premier 12, which would give us a much better shot of Olympic qualification. We're talking about winning medals in the European Championship. And you know what? After the European Championship last year, which was right before the WBC, boy, that was a gut check. We lost our first five games, all of our group games. So now we're playing to maintain status in the top tier of European baseball. And if you're not familiar, you have a European Championship every other year. The bottom two teams are relegated. And then in the other years, you have a qualifier, and the winner of that tournament gets promoted. And I'll tell you what, it's a lot easier to get relegated than it is to get promoted. And we were fighting for our lives, and we caught some breaks, and we managed to stay up, which at the time, I tell you what, felt like winning a gold medal. Just playing for our lives, and that was just a big gut check. Maybe we've set the expectations too high. But then the next week we're playing in the final of the WBC, so maybe we got them just right. Baseball's a gut check, and I love that you said that you made some mistakes and you used that term, not failing, and the whole concept that failure is positive feedback, and trying to think of losing as learning. We certainly had lots of learning opportunities, and the expectations are something we'll continue to run towards rather than change, because things get a little bit tough from time to time.
Yeah, especially nowadays, it's sometimes tough. We see a lot of players, sometimes when times get tough, they run the other way. And, as managers and coaches, it's important for us, obviously, to teach our young players that, you have to embrace that moment. You're going to have good days and bad days, good times and bad times. If you had to pick something that was when you first started as the manager for the national team, national program, what was probably the toughest challenge you had?
It's a great question. And I think it's an ongoing one of the balance of creating more buy-in and opportunities for the domestic-based player as opposed to the overseas citizen, who typically is more prepared, more experienced. So it's creating more opportunities for domestic-based players, which I think is essential. I would love it if one day our WBC team was 28 dudes from all across the UK. Maybe with a supplemental guy that's from the U.S., and hopefully that guy's a big leaguer. The problem is, because they don't have the same opportunities and because they're not exposed to baseball at the highest levels, they often don't know what success looks like in terms of the preparation required. If you're at the collegiate level, if you were at the professional level, or for that matter, if you're at the national team level in a country like Holland. It's getting over this culture. Well, I play baseball. I'm one of the best players domestically. Therefore, I should play for the national team. No, you shouldn't. We put the best team on the field. And I would say it's discriminatory to not put a British passport holder who lives in America on the roster. He's got a passport. He's just as British as the next guy. So that continues to be a struggle. And ultimately, that's on us to continue to be creative with finding ways to give our players opportunities. And as I alluded to, in Brooklyn, when we had the press conference, I'd love better facilities. I absolutely would. I'd love a facility that we could host a European Championship at, but I don't think that's essential for us to put the work in. We just got to put the work in, and we know from countries like the Dominican Republic that you don't need glitz and glamour. You need to work.
Yeah. Now, Europe, in some ways, is a little fascinating. It's really growing now. There's some interesting things about European baseball. You only have so many players, and obviously you're trying to develop more players. What's the struggle between, disciplining a player and, letting them do what they need to do? Because you may not have an example. You may not have two third basemen, you know, and all of a sudden you're a little tougher on that third baseman for whatever reason, and then he doesn't respond as well. But because it's a little different in the U.S., you know, we've got the ability to hang, you know, get two, three players at one position, and now it's a competition. That may not be true in Europe in all programs.
That's tough. Yeah, you're just spot on with when the cupboards are so bare, we just don't want kids to stop playing. I think there's certainly a line that needs to be drawn somewhere where you have values that you stick to, and the rope's only so long before a player or a player's family hangs themselves, so to speak. But we're certainly, I think, much more lenient. If I compare my experience to that in the States, we're certainly more lenient with things because we need players to play, and it's just more onus on us to find more kids that play baseball. I think that's the single biggest challenge for us to catch up with our European neighbors is we need more kids playing. And they're going to get away with more. On the flip side, you know what? We definitely have great kids, and continue to believe that there's no better way of life lessons being taught than through the sport of baseball. And we're fortunate, touch wood, that there's not too many of those disciplinary issues that arise.
You know what? And we're going to go and talk a little bit about developing a sport at a grassroots level. But before we do, I want to go to a key area that you talked about. You talked about sports science, and I believe it was Dean. I met him over in Brooklyn. And tell us why, I think it's important for our coaches around the world to understand why sports science, sports development, athletic development, strength and conditioning, why is that so important for you in developing athletes in the game of baseball?
Oh, boy. Great question. You know what? In its most simple form, I want some athletes. I think if you put an athlete, as long as they're given the right opportunity, an athlete's gonna figure things out pretty good when the crap hits the fan, which we know it will. We talk about shortstop arguably being the most athletic position on the field, and I certainly would take 9 shortstops and put those around the field. For us, I think it's so important too with lack of baseball opportunities. I can't necessarily get the practice in at a high level every day because I don't have the facilities, I don't have the coaching, I don't have that opportunity. But I can find a strength and conditioning or a speed or an agility training opportunity very easily in the UK. So it's a way for if we're really good at being athletic, and improving our athleticism, then it's a way for us to catch up with more traditional baseball playing countries. I also think the way that we're preparing for tournaments, and our players continue to struggle their first one or two times out of the gate because they're used to playing once a week on Sundays, practicing a couple times in the week, and then suddenly we're playing 5 games in 5 days, have an off day, and then we're going to play another 2 to 4 games in 2 to 4 days. And boy, do you have to be in shape for that to be done at a high level. And so our buy-in to various sports science fields and our decision to basically give Alan Dean free reign over that area so that our players can survive at the beginning, survive for a week to 10 days of baseball, and then as they get more used to it and buy into what he wants them to do to excel at that level. You know what, another important point that I think is so vital that it's understood in this day and age is I don't see very many kids that can move well. They might be good soccer players or good basketball players. Usually it's just one or the other, and we continue to have that discussion at so many levels about the multi-sport athlete versus early specialization. But we got kids that can't move. They do not generate energy. They can't move laterally. Forget about a sports-specific skill. We know it's going to break down if you're not in shape. So you might give it a different name because sports science might not be that sexy to a coach of young children, and it certainly won't be exciting necessarily to a kid. They want to play and they want to compete as they should. But if we can make make those children learn more lessons in physical literacy at an earlier age, then I think we'll have better baseball players. We'll have more baseball players, and perhaps more importantly, we'll have healthier children turning into healthier adults.
So as a national team program, you're trying to get the athletic development, the movements, you know, the fun stuff they can do with it at the grassroots level, so that way when they, you know, get to your level, they're already, you know, athletic, they can do more things.
Absolutely. Just so many examples of if we can look after British baseball as a whole, then Great Britain baseball will be looked after. And the kids moving side, I think, is absolutely fundamental. And you know what? I'm not very entrepreneurial. I have lots of good ideas, but I see a massive gap in teaching fundamental movement and physical literacy is the term they use in the UK to children in schools. So perhaps there's a business opportunity there for Great Britain baseball to corner the market.
You know what? Another great lesson for our coaches. I was reading, you know, that you had talked about, you look forward to advancing the UK program on and off the field. Now, I think we got a pretty good idea on the field, and I'd like for you to mention a little bit about, you know, something we may have missed that you want to mention, but also what you meant by off the field and why it's so important.
Absolutely. So we have, whether it's myself or some of our coaches, particularly as well as Alan Dean, we've mentioned, Zach Grafser is our pitching coordinator. Zach comes to the UK via St. Louis, was an assistant coach and recruiter at St. Louis Community College, formerly Merrimack, for 8 years, and now works with us and also with Major League Baseball here in Europe. He's in that situation, much like myself, where we have other halves who are better looking and earn more money. So we have the flexibility to go into clubs on school day, so to speak. And so we've gone out and visited clubs either specifically for coach education. We're just going to sit in your clubhouse or a local classroom or wherever it might be and talk about whatever you want to talk about for a couple of hours. We've also gone in and coached players up, mostly at the youth level, but we have made some adult level club visits. We really want to do that more within the limitations of all being volunteers, some having regular jobs, and a limited budget. We have to maximize whatever opportunities exist to get out, and I want to visit every club. And if I can, I don't want to continue to harp on about the GB Way mission and vision, but I think it's important to have vision defined, and we've defined inspired as our program is visible and accessible. Every British child who plays baseball dreams of playing for their country, and our community passionately supports Great Britain baseball. And we've defined developing as the GB Way is ingrained within the BBF, which is the British Baseball Federation community. Our player identification, development, and selection programs operate worldwide. And this is probably the key one. We are collaborative leaders in all development areas. And the only way I can make that come true is to get our people out more. So we need to visit as many clubs as often as we can and talk about our way. But we also recognize that our way certainly isn't the only way, but it hopefully serves as inspiration for clubs to go out and develop their own way. And it's where the World Baseball Classic on the surface is just a tremendous, awesome, amazing baseball tournament that showcases players from around the world. But when you get under the hood, you really learn how important the opportunity is to the countries that are fortunate enough to be involved. And we have now got from Major League Baseball our award from the Classic qualifier in September. And we'll use that to help spread the GB Way and visit clubs and run camps and whatnot. But you also then understand how big it would have been for us to qualify for the WBC, as well as the exposure. And I'm envious, certainly looking at Israel now having a massive chunk of change that they can spend however they want to develop baseball over there. And that's why us making the WBC remains a massive, massive goal for us.
Now, there's got to be a balance, and that's, I'm sure, and I know it's not easy, and you guys, it sounds like you're doing a fantastic job of really getting out to the communities and trying to get the players to play, and it's not easy to balance, you know, doing real well at the national level, yet, we all understand from a development standpoint, especially long-term development of the growth of the sport, that the grassroots level is the key. And, you know, how in Great Britain, like any other country anywhere in the world, but especially in Europe, because you have competition with other sports, you know, sometimes baseball is not the funnest game to play because it's not a fast-paced game. What are you guys doing there that I think that can help other countries around the world too, share some ideas? What are you doing to attract young players? I know you mentioned something about the schools, but young players that have never played the game to play the game or see what the game's all about, so that way they get a little interested and then grab them and then keep them.
Absolutely. So I think it's important for me to give a little bit more lay of the land over here. So we have the British Baseball Federation, who I volunteer for. The federation runs leagues, runs the national teams program. And then we have the same for softball. Then there's a third organization, which is a unique governing body situation, as far as I'm aware, across the world. We have a company called Baseball Softball UK. They are technically the development agency for the sports, and they actually get government funding to grow and sustain participation. And then they do a little bit of work in talent development. So all sports in the UK apply to an organization called Sport England, which is government funded. They apply on a 4-year basis, put their plan together, and if Sport England thinks it's going to tick boxes and improve participation and whatever else, they'll bankroll your organization for 4 years. And we've been fortunate, be it Baseball Softball UK or BSUK, have done a great job for the last 12 years or so, and they're just entering a new 4-year cycle. Their programming has, for the last 8 to 12 years, been mostly focused on adult growth, which personally I think is ridiculous, trying to get more adults playing as opposed to getting more kids playing, but that's what the British government decided to do. So you had to spend the money that way. What's changing going into the next 4 years is less focus on adult growth, more focus on sustaining your key market, your core market, and also some funding for youth development, which means we can spend money getting into the schools, which I think is absolutely essential. There have been schools programs here that have been absolutely tremendous. There was a Major League Baseball program called Play Ball, not the Play Ball that they just launched. Now it was a different play ball run by the same company, but it did a tremendous job of connecting schools to the local club. So you'd have American coaches that would come over, younger, out of college sort of fit, which is a great fit for schools, with the energy and an American accent. It's gonna get the kids fired up to play. So you'd have these coaches going into the schools, and then there would be the link to get them over to the club. So that's a program that I would love to see come back officially, but certain clubs here are doing a great job. They'll go into the schools, they'll run tasters for about 6 weeks, and then after that, for the kids that are fired up, that want to make the jump and try it more seriously, then here's the club, here's where we are, and here's when we practice. BSUK have a program called Hit the Pitch, which is basically a club or league in a box where, depending on whether you're looking at adults or children or schools or community, you can tailor some things out of Hit the Pitch that are better suited to that target. And then you go in, and it's a 6-week program, for example, that's going to have X number of practices a week and then a competition structure at the end of it. The big challenge, though, will remain. We need to get into more schools. And I don't have all the answers. I just know it works. Are you a fan of the West Wing television show?
I have seen it, yes.
So I'm a big West Wing fan. I think the writing was phenomenal. And there's a scene towards the end of the show where C.J. Craig, who was the press secretary, who becomes the chief of staff, she obviously needs a new job after 2 terms of the same president. And there's a totally rich dude that wants to spend money on a single problem. He wants to throw $10 billion at a single problem, and he chooses her. And you're thinking, I mean, I think it was specifically about Africa. How can we help Africa with $10 billion? And her answer for single problem is highways. And it's not sexy. You think of all the different things you could spend $10 billion on. You think in drugs and whatever else, pharmaceutical stuff. She says highways, and the whole deal is without the infrastructure, it doesn't matter about anything else. What we're continuing to struggle with is to figure out what the highways are for British baseball so that we can grow at the grassroots level. And I don't think it's as simple as saying going into schools, because it's obvious. Yeah, going to school is where the kids are. But how do we get the kids to continue playing baseball when term ends, which you have to do in the UK because you're not playing baseball anywhere but summer because of the weather. And I'm pretty much convinced at the moment that our highways, so to speak, are club development, which is, if you use American language, is building your program, and coach education.
Yeah, and since you hit on that, and for everybody on Facebook, we are with Liam Carroll, national team coach with Great Britain. He's in charge of the national team program and development in Great Britain. Liam, here I'm going to give you a wish list. Liam Carroll goes to the schools. He's got, you're going to every school in Great Britain, and you're going to introduce the sport. Give us your best things that you think that you need to show the kids right away, to grab them, to make that game interesting. Whatever you're going to do that day, give us an idea of what you would like to do, so you can get those kids interested right away in the sport.
On the spot. Wow. You know what? I think it's demonstration. Absolutely, my first instinct was I'm going to show MLB stars. I'm going to show a video. And I'm going to see Mike Trout and Andrew McCutchen running and throwing and hitting. But even if it's actually only 70 miles an hour, which we know really isn't very much by the top standards in the world, if we've got a couple guys throwing a ball 70 miles an hour in front of some 8-year-old kids, they're going to get the wow factor. So it's having coaches that can demonstrate at a high level, not a world-class level, at a high level in front of those children. And then this will get into the coach education aspect. They don't necessarily need to have world-class Jim Leland baseball knowledge. They need to know how to coach. It's about having the right coach in the right place at the right time. It doesn't need to be Jim Leland. It needs to be a younger guy, ideally probably with an American accent, who can demonstrate at a decent level and can connect with today's kids.
Right. Now, are you going to have them? Now, you got these kids, and the teacher says, "Well, you got them for an hour. What would you do? And to give coaches around the world a little idea, because you're talking about could be 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds. What would you do with them for that hour or half hour? To again get them excited about the game. So that way they do want to join one of the clubs and to continue to play the game a little bit.
We're going to get to a game as soon as possible. The logical thing, we play catch first. You've got to play catch first. Play catch can be very boring, and it can also be a struggle when you have, let's say, a class of 30 kids of different ability levels. Where, like in England, like which hand does the glove go on? Yeah, you got to throw with that hand, big guy. So we're going to spend as little time on catch play day one as possible. We're going to get to playing a game as soon as we can. And then you referenced speed of the game earlier. Between it needing to be relatively quick-paced and between not being able to teach virtually any of the rules in your first session, and we all know, like if I'm just going to talk after about 30 seconds, they're not listening. So we're gonna play a modification, and the progression that I would use when I used to go into schools, the first game we would play, one inning is everybody hits once, which is a simple modification. Sure. The bases are set up as they normally are, at a shorter distance for whatever space that you have. And if you think about London, how busy, jam-packed London is. You don't have a very big schoolyard. You're in a pretty small space usually. And instead of getting one run to circuit the bases, they're going to get 1 point for each base they step on, and they're not going to stop. They don't need to worry about running the bases intelligently. They just need to worry about running the bases aggressively. And every base they step on, they get 1 point, so the most they can get is 4. We're going to have a cumulative team score. the defender's job, all they have to do is field the ball and throw it back to me, and it's a coach pitch game. As soon as I get the ball back, the base runner stops running. So they might have got 1 point, might have got 4 points. We're learning how to hit. And I've never had to do this off a tee. As much as I'm a big fan of tees, and I know there are people out there that aren't the motor learning crew, and don't get me wrong, motor learning is obvious, it's science, it works, but I still believe in tees. But for whatever it was, maybe it was blind luck, would find a way, even for the most uncoordinated seven-year-old, to hit the ball, even if it meant an adaptation, a bigger ball or a bigger bat. But anyway, we're learning how to hit, we're learning how to base run aggressively, which I would much rather teach intelligence into a base runner than teach aggressiveness. We're learning how to field, we're learning how to throw. So we're basically playing catch without calling it that. We would progress this. Exactly, yeah. It's quick and fun and competitive. We would progress this so that we would turn it from points to runs. So this time when the ball gets thrown back to me, if you're not standing on a base, doesn't matter which base it is, if you're not standing on a base, you're out. So now you got to start running the bases intelligently as well as aggressively. No, we can't have two people on the same base. And then we would change it. So instead of playing catch with me, they need to learn how to play catch with each other. So we would put targets in the outfield, like hula hoops. Three different color hula hoops. When the ball gets hit, we say a color. The ball has to be under control of one of the defensive players inside that particular color hula hoop. Base runner, if you're not on a base when the ball is in that hula hoop, you're out. Like I say, they're learning how to play catch with each other rather than with me. Then also you'll have the fast kist will field the ball in left field. And he runs all the way over to the blue hula hoop in right field. Like, hey, is there a quick way to get it there? Yeah, I could throw it. Maybe it's worth having someone stand by that hula hoop, right? Yeah, okay. So now we're basically assigning positions without having to put a first baseman at first base who's going to get trucked because they don't know that they need to get out of the way. And then by week six, you're basically playing baseball. Albeit maybe with the exception, you haven't taught tagging up yet because that's just a different animal with children sometimes. But it's a progression, it's competitive, it's fun. And by week six, you hope that if they're hooked, they are going to go off to the club across the street.
That's outstanding. And as I look at Facebook, our friends on Facebook, Joe Morello, just want to mention from Italy, he talked about using wiffle balls because they don't hurt, or a softer type of baseball. You know, he talked about they're doing some things with stickball. You know, I know we just did a caravan over in, British Columbia, in Canada, and they do a great program, a caravan of 2 weeks. And there we used wiffle ball bats that were the size of, triple the size of a bat, just huge wiffle ball bats along with wiffle balls that were pretty big. You know, so the kids were always hitting the ball all the time and not missing, which makes it a little bit more fun. You know, and fast paced. So I love all that stuff that helps develop young kids, get them motivated about playing the game, because it's all about reaching the young players. But also it's going to lead into the kind of the ending of the show, and I believe one of the most important things, and you mentioned it a few times, but I really want to get into it a little bit, how you guys, what you're doing in Great Britain to develop your coaches. Because, you know, I don't know of a program that doesn't have, if you don't have great coaches at the grassroots level that really know how to work with kids and really know how to track them to play the game and then keep them interested and continue to have fun with them so they learn, you know, you just don't have a sport. The sport's not going to grow. And as you mentioned, you have all volunteers, as we do in the U.S. We got volunteers all over the U.S. that volunteer their time, but they are so important that coaches' development is important, giving them aid in how to become a better coach. What are you guys doing in Great Britain? Give me some specifics that our listeners can learn from, what they can also do to help develop their coaches, because these coaches, as you said, not one are volunteers, but two are kind of spread out all over the country.
Absolutely. So one of the areas that Baseball Softball UK, the development agency, they have ownership of here is coach education. A colleague of mine who actually just finished with Baseball Softball UK, Will Lintern, who's the head coach also of our under-18 national team, has been in charge of coach education for the last few years and done a tremendous job. And one of the things that's interesting here compared to the U.S. and certainly exists in other European countries is – is the coach education model is pretty consistent across sports, from some sort of entry level course, which for us we call an activator, which, as the name suggests, we want someone prepared to just go into a setting, whether it's a school setting or an adult slow pitch setting, whatever it is, and activate people, get them moving. You don't need to know all the rules. You do need to know game modifications. And then we also have a course above that, which is currently called Level 2, that is designed, if you complete this qualification, you are qualified to be a head coach, whether it's a club head coach or to lead schools sessions, that kind of thing. One of the other things that Will has added, which I love and I hope we create the buy-in, is calls them CPD, continuous professional development modules. So there's a hitting, pitching, infield, sports science module that's offered more regularly, and you'll have different levels of that same module. So an intro to pitching and then advanced pitching is a crude example. And what we hope this does, and it's the good product for it, is to switch coach education from, well, I got to go on this course, I don't really want to, especially because I got to pay for it, and it lasts 1 day or 2 days, maybe 3 days, and then that's it, to something you're invested in continuously. So between going on the big course, you're going to go on X number of CPD modules, and hopefully, at least in my eyes, it's almost like a prerequisite. You've got to go on these CP modules between the main events. We supplement that with much more informal clinics that Great Britain Baseball has run a few of, and we really want to run more of. Just trying to get people through the door, a lower price point, whether it's free or just a small fee to cover costs. But we're not gonna do anything that requires certification, assessment. We're just gonna talk baseball, some of our stuff and whatever you want to, and hopefully that gets people in the door, because we do have a culture that we need to change where I know baseball, and that exists from people that have just been involved for a long time here, and sure, they do know some baseball, but they still need to go on these courses and stay current. And then we have, dare I say it, I'm from America, therefore I know baseball.
I could give you a lot of those.
Right. So hopefully what we do just gets people bought in to go on the official courses that BSUK runs, because they're good. There's good info. And what I would say is, and this is where there's lots of information to be shared across sports and across countries, is the how to coach stuff is just so much more important than the what to coach for so many people. We all know that old expression that the best players don't always make the best coaches. Just because you know a lot doesn't mean you can teach it. Doesn't mean you can teach it to different learning styles in different challenging environments. So even if it's as simple as you need to talk louder, or you need to wear a watch because you got to be on time, and your 15-minute session's got to be 15 minutes, not 30 minutes. Or where you're standing, half the group can't hear you. Or guess what? You spoke for 20 minutes. How much of that 20 minutes did they actually get? Maybe you should talk less and do more. Did you check for learning? Did you ask them questions? Or was it a case of you just talking at them and assuming that they learned stuff? And these courses do a tremendous job of presenting how to coach as well as what to coach. It would also, I guess, it also be remiss of me if I did not mention the Coach Summit that BSUK have organized the last 2 years. This year was actually supported by ISG, as you know that group so well. I'm not sure if you're the president, VP, or CEO, but I know you're integral to ISG, who do a tremendous job. This year we had David Turgeon from the Pittsburgh Pirates and Pat Doyle over, and then last year we had Brian Kane, the sports psychology guru. So that's been a tremendous opportunity for coaches to learn from some overseas-based coaches.
Boy, I'll tell you what, that is some great stuff that you guys are doing with your coaches. I love hearing that. And I know on behalf of ISG as the VP, you know, we're thrilled to be part of anything we can do to help Great Britain Baseball, and we'll continue to do it, obviously. Now, here's what, you know, I want to kind of end the show with. I think it's been a great show. I think you've had some great insight on the game. Keeping kids interested is extremely important. And one of the ways that kids get bored sometimes in the game, and this is anywhere in the world, is when coaches are running a practice, and you hit on some key areas there. Give us an idea of what you believe some of the key things in running a practice for a coach is and why. And then what we'll end it with is anything else that you want to mention to all our coaches and players around the world that might give them some insight into the development of the game.
Absolutely. So I think it was a coaching basketball class I took at UNLV. I feel terrible right now because I remember the story, but the teacher's name has just escaped me, and I feel terrible for it. But he was in the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, I believe. This older basketball coach, his classes were really short, which was awesome. Probably not the best thing. I don't know if the department knew, but his classes sometimes might last 5 minutes. He'd find the cutest girl typically in the class to take roll call. That's how we rolled. But I remember vividly the message almost every time, even when the class was short, he would always leave the same message. You got to teach, you got to create, and you got to motivate. And I think the creativity part of it, as you've mentioned several times here, being creative is key to teaching and to motivating, especially with a group of or a culture of disinterest that seems to permeate a lot of different areas of our society these days. So the creative aspect is huge with us. One of the things I massively struggle with, though, is I agree that practices should be short, sharp, and crisp, but I also know that there isn't a coach in the world that doesn't complain about the player who's not putting the work in outside of practice. Mm-hmm. And coaches get fired up about the kid who arrives early and leaves late. I think it was Skip Bertman that said, there's no secret to success. Get there early, leave late. If we want our kids to get there before practice and then we want them to stay after practice, why don't we just have longer practices? But you can't do that because it's not for everybody. So generally, I just struggle with that concept. How do we make sure the practice is short, sharp, crisp, but we're providing enough opportunities? And I think creativity there is key. Some of the things we try to do is really shake it up in terms of the ordering of practice, trying to get away from talk, warm up, catch play, slash throwing program, individual defense, team defense, BP. So obviously, there are certain things you can't do unless you've warmed up your arm, but we'll do other things before we've played catch. Maybe not every day, but just to shake it up. We're gonna do some, we call them just get ready drills, whether it's if we're inside throwing against the wall with your partner in front of you so they can't see the ball and stuff like that. Just get them engaged mentally and get them moving before we then slow it down with a throwing program that sometimes does go very slow, whether you're doing a two-knee drill or something like that. We also try and shake it up sometimes with not posting the practice plan. I think this was an Andy Lopez trick from one of his books, like just to check that they do what they need to do. Or are they completely robotic and just not doing anything if there's no practice plan posted? We've also more recently had players teach us. If they can teach it, they've probably learned it. So we're having players lead sessions. Outside of that, we're also generally having our players take more ownership of what they're doing. I can give them all the drills in the world, and so can you, and we can give them different points to focus on, but they need ownership. We preach that the developed player is sound mechanically, sound in terms of their plan, and is their own best coach, self-coach. We preach that all the time. We actually need to give them permission to lead and fail by, hey, you're on your tee, then you got front toss, but you're doing it yourself. You're doing what you want to for the next 30 minutes, for example. Last thing I would say is just it's a struggle for us with that short, sharp aspect sometimes. From a national team perspective, I referenced earlier, we don't see each other all the time. We have our national team development program, which operates from under U15, as you say in the States. For whatever reason, we say under 15, but U15 up to U18, and then our domestic adult players. So we'll have anywhere from 50 to 80, sometimes even 100 players, and we only see them once a month. We're not having a two-hour practice. We're having a five-hour practice or a six-hour practice. So making it as competitive as possible, blending. So sure, we'll do four different front toss or live BP stations, for example, but instead of doing them one by one by one, we'll bounce back and forth so that this challenge and the stimuli consistently changes. And one thing that's been huge for our program, and I think it would exist in other environments too, not just in a national team setting, is completely mixing up where it's safe, completely mixing up the 13-year-old, the youngest kid in the program, all the way up to the guy that played professional baseball, so that they get to learn from each other. And yes, the coaches and the older players are learning from the kids, and just create chemistry across an entire program rather than just within each silo of a team.
Outstanding. I'll tell you what a great way to end the show. Liam Carroll, national team coach for Great Britain. I got to tell you, we had a lot of people on Facebook, the most we've ever had. I can't mention them all, but I do want to mention Pete Dirkovic, because he was the pitching coach for Pakistan. He's up in the East Coast in New York, played for me with the Schaumburg Flyers. He mentioned teach, create, and motivate, another three great terms to use. Pete, thanks for joining us on Facebook, and thank everybody on Facebook for joining us today. It's been a great show. Liam, listen, it's been outstanding. Thanks for being on the show. Hopefully we can have you back, because I think we might have a great session just on practice organization.
Pete, it's been an absolute thrill. I would love to come back. This is an honor, given how much you're doing for the sport. Man, you're everywhere. I don't think I can look up at something going on anywhere around the world, and you're just killing it. So I appreciate the invite, and I certainly would love to come back.
Thank you, and I hope to see you. I hope to come to Great Britain soon and see you guys and be able to do some things with you. So again, thanks for being on the show. Thank you to all our listeners on Facebook. We really appreciate being there. Thank you to our listeners on the podcast. Do us a favor. Please spread the show, whether it's social media, on Twitter. Our Twitter is @BaseballOut. Our website, Baseball Outside the Box. You can join on iTunes and Stitcher. Spread the word. We really need to get the show out. It's been getting out little by little, and it's really expanding all over the world. And we feel we've got something great going here. Don't forget, check out our Facebook at baseballoutsidethebox.com. We've got, Facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox. Join us once a week. We will see you soon. Finally, love getting your emails. Don't forget, email us. Let us know any questions you might have. If you have questions for Liam, we'll have his information on our show notes on the website. Anything you want to know about the show, any questions about baseball development, email us at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. And remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.